Okay, good morning, everybody. Welcome back to our Thursday morning shiur at the Yangas of Vladimir. We hope everyone is well. Time goes fast. When we broke for Chag, it seemed like we weren't meeting for such a long time. And now here we are again. So let us resume our learning. I hope everyone had a meaningful Yom Tov. Erev Rosh Chodesh Iyar. Iyar stands for Ani Hashem Rofa Echa. Aleph Yod Yod Resh. Ani Hashem Rofa Echa. Hashem should heal us from our individual nisyonos, our national sorrows, and this very, very long galus. So today and next week, given the Inyanei Diyoma on the modern day Jewish calendar, which is that in the end of Nisan and the beginning of Iyar, Israel commemorates Yom HaShoah, and then in quick succession, Dalad Iyar Yom HaZikaron, and then Hey Iyar Yom HaAtzmaut, and this year is the 75th birthday of the modern day state of Israel. So today's shiur and next week's shiur will be focusing on the topic of combined Yom HaShoah, Yom HaZikaron, and Yom HaAtzmaut. So we will begin in my grandfather's memoirs. I have quoted from them many times. Yom HaShoah was 2 days ago. Yes, 2 days ago. Tuesday, my son said, my son's in Hank. They had a Holocaust survivor who came and spoke, and I said to him, it's such a schuss that you were zochah to hear this story, because they're aging quickly and rapidly, and that generation is quickly fading, and it's such a schuss that you were able to say you heard and you saw and you witnessed, and you personally, not you read in a book and not someone else told you, but you saw and heard from a woman who survived the horrors of the Shoah. And he said it was just incredible. A number of the rabbeim spoke. So it was 2 days ago, and that is followed, of course, by Yom HaZikaron, which is one of the most absolutely painful days on the modern-day Jewish calendar, followed by Yom HaAtzmaut, one of the most overwhelmingly days of gratitude on the Jewish calendar. I begin with my grandfather's memoirs, as you know, because I've quoted from it many times. My grandfather Yitzchak ben Moshe, Alav HaShalom, entitled his memoirs In 7 Camps in 3 Years. He was 25 years old when the Holocaust broke out. He lived in Poland. The Germans entered in 1939. He lost his wife, his baby daughter, his entire family. I usually quote from the beginning, if you remember, and it would be appropriate because tomorrow's Rosh Chodesh. When he writes about it, Shabbos Rosh Chodesh, where are the Germans taking us? We have to go Daven Hallel. But I'm going to quote from a later section of the memoirs, perhaps not as familiar to us. So I'm in the middle of the memoirs. After that disastrous Sunday, when he was from Krasnik, from the Polish town of Krasnik. After that disastrous Sunday, when half the city was destroyed, and we who were left still did not know and did not believe that all those who were removed were already dead. And for 6 more months until Sukkot 1942, when the great catastrophe wiped out Jewish life in Air Krasnik. I shall never forget that Yom Kippur, which is 1942, when everyone realized the forthcoming catastrophe. We gathered at Reb Peretz Shochitz for Kol Nidre. This is 1942 Kol Nidre. When I passed through the streets where my first Rebbe, Rabbi Avram Brand, lived, I saw him sitting by the door. No, wait, the handouts were just brought in. I don't remember. He brought in the handouts. Thank you so much. Just take and pass. You could share with the person next to you. I'll let you know when we need them. Thank you. She was coming to get them. Okay, take and pass and just share with the person next to you. Please don't let the handout distract you. I'll tell you when we need to get up to it. I know there's pictures and I don't want you to be distracted because thank you so much. But please let's focus on what we're talking about now. I shall never forget that Yom Kippur when everyone realized the forthcoming catastrophe. We gathered at Reb Peretz Shochitz for Kol Nidre. When I passed through the street, thank you very much, where my first Rebbe, Rabbi Avram Brand, lived, I saw him sitting by the door as if he was dressed for a voyage. And I said to him, what are you waiting for? And he said to me, I am waiting for death's arrival. That was his answer. A Shabbos after Sukkot in the year 1942, the darkest year in Jewish history, when everybody already knew there would be a count, as it was euphemistically called, my wife and I and our 18-month-old daughter, if you remember from the beginning of the memoirs, her name was Devorah because she was born Parshas Beshalach, 1941. My wife and I and our 18-month-old daughter went to an open camp which was called P-I Park. Several hundred Jews had already been taken there. Before noon on Shabbos, all of us were hurried from the barracks, and we could see the long boxcars, usually used to transport fruit. They were already prepared for the unfortunate Krasnik Jews. I remember well the last good day from my father on the horrifying Black Shabbos. He said to me, "Be well," with tears in his eyes. And he added, "Try to save yourself." I did not see my father or my sisters anymore. In the morning on Shabbos, they hurried us from the barracks. 83 young Jews were chosen to work. And the older men, women, and children were gathered before our eyes. They were hurried to the train station, where there are already other Jews from the city. We saw them herd everyone into the boxcars. When the transport with the unfortunates rolled past, their final "be well" wafted to us through the dilapidated openings. A few days later, we were driven from P Park. They took a count to determine, the Germans, whether the count corresponded to the earlier count, 83 men. When we arrived at the camp, Natan Meisels and his brother-in-law, Alter Edelstein, may God avenge his blood. He's saying that these two, remember, this was written in Yiddish, and it was translated by professionally into English. When we were recounted, they saw two extra. I think the two extra were Natan Meisels and Alter Edelstein. And they took out two from the first row. I was one of them. In other words, there were too many people. There were two extra. There was only supposed to be 83, and there were 85. And they said we would be shot immediately. I saw a black revolver aimed at me, and I looked death in the eye. At the last minute, the foreman approached the SS man and paid a sum of money, and they let us go. After that, they drove us to Budzin, where there were already hundreds of Jews from Krasnik. And here, the true hell began. I still remember well several names of those killed: Rabbi Yoshua Asher Weinberg, Rav Peretz Feder. Rav Peretz Feder and I talked continually about the murderers, that they were sent by God and their end is near. "We suffer now," we said, "so the Messiah will come. Whoever will survive this hell will see a Jewish state." I remember my uncle, Moishe Markovitz, a boy of 13. Handsome as a tree in bloom, he was among those who were shot. May God avenge his blood. Sometime later, on the way to work, my brother-in-law, Baruch Erlich, was able to edge out of the column. He wanted to go to the city, to the Christian who took everything we owned. The first Pole that met him surrendered him to the Germans. My brother-in-law was brought back to the Budzin camp and shot before the eyes of everyone. I had to carry him outside the camp to the mass grave, where I saw the hands of feet and those previously shot sticking out of the grave. As they lay on the pallet, him and his bunkmate, Rav Peretz Feder, spoke about the murderers, that they were sent by God. And they said, "We suffer now, so the Messiah will come. Whoever will survive this hell will see a Jewish state." In quick succession, at the end of Nisan and the beginning of Iyar, Medina Yisrael observes Yom HaShoah, Yom HaZikaron, and Yom HaAtzmut. The Pasuk tells us, which I think is actually on your handout, just one Pasuk. The Pasuk tells us on page 1 about Eretz Yisrael. Eretz asher Hashem Elokecha doresh osa. Tamid einei Hashem Elokecha bameresh yisashana v'ad achrishana. A Pasuk from Devarim, Perek Yud Aleph, Pasuk Yud Beis. How special is Eretz Yisrael? It is a land that Hashem your God seeks out. Tamid means always and consistently. Always and consistently, the eyes of God are upon this land from the beginning of the year until the end of the year. Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik, the Rav, says, Hasharas Hashchina, the reality of the divine presence, is a continuous process in Eretz Yisrael. The Hasharas Hashchina, the reality of the divine presence, is a continuous process in Eretz Yisrael. Hasharas Hashchina, he says, is, quote, part of the climate. Just as there are different kinds of climates, there are cold climates, there are warm climates. Similarly, there are climates completely devoid of the divine presence and climates very conducive to the divine presence. Just as it is natural in the morning to wake up and see the sun shining or hear the rain falling, it is natural in Eretz Yisrael to get up in the morning and find the Shechina. Just as one who walks out in the rain will get wet, and one who walks out in the sunshine will feel warm, so too one who lives in Eretz Yisrael must feel and absorb the Ruach HaKodesh. He will simply be saturated with Kavod Elokim. Sure, in places where the prophets thousands of years ago had conversations with HaKadosh Baruch Hu are still endowed with the potential of Hashar Sashchina for everyone. Those who want to can receive it even today. Anyone who is in Eretz Yisrael and kisses the stones where the prophets walked merits to share of the divine presence, regardless of whether he is a great rabbinic scholar or not. The gate, in other words, the Asharas HaShechina, the Kedushas HaAretz, the connection with the Ribono Shel Olam, the Rav says, is accessible to anyone who wants it. Whether he's a great rabbinic scholar, whether he's the Gadol Hador, a Rosh Hashiva, a Talmud Chacham, or not, or whether he is a regular, simple Jew who walks where the prophets walked, who walks the streets of Eretz Yisrael, the gates of heaven are open to Tzion. Anything that emerges or comes down from the gates of heaven comes down to Tzion. There are special windows in heaven that are only open to Tzion. And then the Rav quotes his pasuk, "Einei Hashem Elokecha b'mereishis hashana v'ad'ach v'shara." No other land in the world can imitate this quality. No other land in the world can imitate this quality. All one needs to do is open oneself up to the divine flow, which is like dew, tal, or a stream, amei menuchos yena'aleini, coming down upon the land from heaven. Furthermore, we describe Eretz Yisrael as an Eretz Chemda when we recite Birkas HaMazon. That first quote was from "The Lord is righteous in all his ways." This next quote is the Birkon Mesorat HaRav, the Birkon, the bencher, with commentary and teachings of Rav Salvechik. Noda lecha Hashem Elokeinu al shichalta lavoseinu Eretz Chemda. Noda lecha is the paragraph of giving thanks to the Ribono Shel Olam for the Eretz Chemda, Tova u'Rachava, sherasisa v'yichalta la'avoseinu. There's a famous story told over in many places about the grave of Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. Oh, Mimi, I think I saw it brought down in the book on Break Your Brachos Meaningful. It's also in other places. It's a very famous story of Shlomo Zalman. It is. It's in that sefer. And he was benching, and one time he repeated the paragraph of Noda. So after he benched, whoever was with him, the grave of Shlomo Zalman, the Posek Hador, asked him, why did he repeat it? And he said, Noda lecha is the paragraph of giving thanks to the Ribono Shel Olam for the great matana of Eretz Yisrael. I don't think I had the proper kavana the first time I said it about giving thanks for the land, so I repeated it again. So why do we describe Eretz Yisrael as we understand Tova, Urechava, Sarasisa v'yichalta lavoseinu, yeah, lecha mepriya, lispo metuva, but why is it described as chemda? What does the word mean, nechmad? Eretz Chemda, says the Rav. Again, this is a quote from the Rav from a different sefer than the first quote. It is a desirable land. What does this word mean? The Torah uses the word Nechmad. The first time we see it is all the way back by Maaseh Bereishis. In Parak Gimel, what does it say that the woman saw about the tree? In Nechmad ha'etz lahaskil. The tree is described as this characteristic of Chemda, meaning the forbidden tree, the Eitz Hadas Tov Vera. But something about the tree pulled her, enticed her. It was like a magnetic force that she could not get away from. The word Nechmad, says the Rav, when we describe Eretz Yisrael as a land that is Chemda, it does not simply mean it is beautiful, which it is. It does not simply mean it's desirable, which it is. You know, we were in Baruch Hashem for the first days of Yom Tov and the first 2 days of Chol HaMoed, so 6 days total. We were in Denver for Yom Tov. My brother-in-law, sister-in-law, and family live in Denver, and they invited us to go. And I'd only been there once before, the fall before COVID, on a scholar in residence, which was less than 48 hours. And now we were with the children. It was beautiful. It was really beautiful to spend time with the family. And it's so beautiful there. The first day we went to the zoo. Did anyone ever go to the Cheyenne Mountain Zoo? It's like an hour and a half out of Denver. It's in a mountain. And the second day we went on a hike. So the Niflaus HaBoreh are just incredible. But I was talking to a family, because last year we were zocha to be in Eretz Yisrael for Pesach. So I said, it's so beautiful here. You could appreciate the Niflaus HaBoreh. And I was talking to my father-in-law about it also. I said, but you don't look at the bush and your heart doesn't move inside of you. You acknowledge that it's a beautiful land. Hashem's creations are gorgeous everywhere. I mean, it was just stunning. The mountains, the hiking, it was incredible. But you don't feel any attachment. You could acknowledge and say and appreciate how beautiful Hashem's creations are. But you don't feel an attachment to the mountains. You don't feel an attachment to the flowers. You don't. Maybe you do. I don't know. I don't feel an attachment to the stream. I say it's so beautiful. It really is. You have to appreciate Marbu Masach Hashem. Every night I was able to see the Big Dipper. Every night, all the nights I was there, I was able to see the Big Dipper right over us. It's gorgeous, but you don't feel a pull of the land. Rav Soloveitchik said the word nechmad does not only mean beautiful or desirable, as most translate it. The word nechmad, translated by unklus, is rogeg, umirageg ilana, liistalkoba. That's the Aramaic of ki eitz nechmad. The eitz nechmad is described umirageg ilana. Ilana is a tree, mirageg is rogeg. It means, says the Rav, fascinating, alluring, pulling. It has an allure. There is one type of beauty that is aesthetically pleasing, but it does not necessarily attract a person. And that's why, listen again, everything in Denver, the land is beautiful. Hashem's creations everywhere are beautiful. But there is one type of beauty that is aesthetically pleasing, but does not necessarily attract a person. However, there's another kind of beauty that pulls a person in like a magnet. The person becomes intoxicated in the face of such beauty. They cannot resist such beauty. When Isha saw the tree, she fell under the spell. Almost involuntarily, she reached out. She could not control herself. This is chemda. When we refer to Eretz Yisrael, says the Rav, as an Eretz chemda tova urechava, it means that it is a land that attracts the Jewish people. It enchants us. We will never let her go. Indeed, at no point, says the Rav, in our long and painful diaspora, did we ever give up on Eretz Yisrael. No matter how distant we are, we cannot escape the pull of the land. This is why we call it Eretz Chemda. When we were walking, you know, down the ramp in JFK to go to our plane, Delta, to Denver. So my son and I, we saw that all plane. So I said to him, should we just go on that one, sneak on that one instead? There's something about the land that pulls you to the land that you cannot get away from. In the summer of 5674, which was 1914, over 100 years ago, Rav Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Cook Zatzal stopped in Berlin on his way to Frankfurt for the Agudas Yisrael's first Knessia Gedola. In 1914, the Agudas Yisrael was having their first Knessia Gedola. The assembly was canceled due to the outbreak of World War I, and Rav Cook was forced to remain in Western Europe for several years. The day the war broke out, Rav Cook met Rav Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg, so I'm talking about two Gedolei Europa, two Gedolim, on a train to Berlin. Actually, Rav Cook then, on his kavod, said, Ola la aretz, ola la Yerushalayim, ola hashamayma. The two scholars discussed Torah matters, and Rav Cook was very impressed with Rav Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg's scholarly erudition. Many years later, Rav Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg related the following story. Once, he said, Rav Cook visited my apartment in Berlin. Hoping to please him in some way, I brought him over to the window, which had a breathtaking view of the city. However, he was unimpressed with the view. Instead, he burst into tears, and he whispered, looking out the window, Al naharos bavel sham yashavnu gam bachinu v'zachreinu etzion. When he lived in Switzerland during World War I, Rav Kook occasionally fell into a deep depression. These two stories are from the book An Angel Among Men by Simcha Raz, the biography of Rav Kook. If you have not read it, you really should. Simcha Raz. He also wrote the biography of Rav Ari Levin, a tzaddik in our time. So, two unbelievable gedolim of the old yeshuv, pre-state, Ohev Yisrael, if you haven't read them, you really should. The author Simcha Raz. When Rav Kook lived in Switzerland during World War I, he occasionally fell into a deep depression over reports that he received about the situation in Eretz Yisrael. One day, Rav Zalman Pines offered to take Rav Kook on a trip to the Alps to take his mind off his worries. Rav Kook agreed. After traveling by car for some time, they stopped at a place which had a magnificent view of the mountains. Rav Kook, however, was lost in thought and he did not pay much attention. Rav Zalman said, Kavod HaRav, look how beautiful the mountains are. Rav Kook lifted his eyes and he said, Yes, yes, Yerushalayim, Harim Savivla. Last year, after we came back from Eretz Yisrael, or maybe while we were still in Eretz Yisrael, I was talking to my father-in-law about the trip. You know, when you're in Eretz Yisrael, like every bush, you're like, wow, look at the bush. So you'll be somewhere else, it will be a bush. It might be very nice, maybe it's blossoming. But that's the character of Nechma, the Chemda. And my father-in-law aptly described the experience of Eretz Yisrael. And he said, to one who has not been there, it cannot be described. And the one who has been there cannot describe it. To the one who has not been there, it cannot be described. And the one who has been there cannot describe it. A well-known saying says that Yom HaShoah reminds us of the cost of not having a state, and Yom HaZikaron reminds us of the cost of having a state. Once again, Yom HaShoah reminds us of the cost of not having a state. My grandfather lay on the pallet. He was in 7 camps in 3 years. And he said, we suffer now so the Messiah will come. Whoever will survive this hell will see a Jewish state. And yet Yom HaZikaron reminds us of the cost of having a state. The next saying, right, this is in my notes. You can see at this point they're bolded. 3 sayings that I'm sharing with you. The first one is, to one who has not been there cannot be described, and one who has been there cannot describe it. You simply can't describe it. I mean that the land pulls you, that the mountains and the trees and the flowers are different, that the air is different. How could you describe it? The second well-known saying, author unknown, is that Yom HaShoah reminds us of the cost of not having a state, while Yom HaZikaron reminds us of the terrible, painful cost of having a state. The last saying is attributed to the Ponovisher Rav of Kahneman, 1886 Lithuania to 1969 Bnei Brak. But I do not know, I'm saying this outright, if it's really attributed, really said by Rav Kahneman or not. It's attributed to Rav Kahneman. I don't have a source. Only one who has not, it's famous, since his time, Ponovish flies down to today, the Israeli flag over the yeshiva in Bnei Brak. I'm sure you're aware of this. Yes, some of you, yes, no, maybe, hello. Ponovish, you could Google it. And Bnei Brak on Yom HaAtzmaut flies the Israeli flag over the yeshiva. Attributed to the Ponovish Rav of Kahneman Zatzal, only one who has not smelled the air over Auschwitz can denigrate the Jewish state. The next story about Rav Kahneman, the Ponovish Rav, I do have, and it is sourced. The Novominsker Rav Zatzal, Rav Yaakov Perlow, if you remember, he was nifter 3 years ago, Erev Pesach, from COVID. The Novominsker loved to tell over the story of the Ponovisher Rav. The Ponovisher Rav was on a fundraising trip. Remember, the Ponovisher Rav of Kahneman was born in 1886 in Lithuania, in Lita. And one time, he started Ponovish. One time, the Ponovisher Rav returns from to Eretz Yisrael from a fundraising trip abroad. When he went into the bank to deposit the money he had collected, The secular bank teller launched into a diatribe about how Orthodox Jews are parasites, always financially dependent upon others. The Panovitcher Rav looked at him and smiled, and he said to the bank teller, "You know, the non-Jewish bank teller in Lithuania told me the same thing. But do you know what the difference is? Your grandchildren will learn in my yeshiva." And finally, Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein Shlita, a son-in-law of Rav Elyashiv Zatzal, a great posek, dayan scholar in Bnei Brak. The Zilbersteins were newly married when the Rosh Yeshiva, how do you pronounce this town? L-U-C-E-R-N-E, Lucerne, Switzerland? Yeah, okay. The Zilbersteins were newly married when the Rosh Yeshiva of Lucerne, Switzerland, Lucerne. The Zilbersteins were newly married when the Rosh Yeshiva of Lucerne, Switzerland, asked Rav Mordechai Shulman in Eretz Yisrael to suggest a candidate for Magid Shir. One name came back, Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein. He was a young Torah scholar at the time, a son-in-law of Rav Elyashiv. Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein Shlita writes this story in his Sefer, Shoshanas Ha'amakim. His first Rabbitson, Rabbitson Shoshana Elyashiv, was his first Rabbitson, Shoshanas Ha'amakim. He himself writes this story. One day I was walking with my Rosh Yeshiva of Mordechai Shulman, who came to Switzerland. He was visiting from Eretz Yisrael. We were on the street, and I said to Rav Shulman, "Rosh Yeshiva, Rabbi, isn't the air good here? Isn't it clear?" The Rosh Yeshiva turned to me, shaken by my words. He looked into my eyes, and he said to me, "I do not like your words. Has the air of Switzerland become beautiful to you? I thought you came here for the holy atmosphere of Torah. What kind of talk is this?" When I came home, I told my wife what had happened. And she said to me, "It is time to return to Eretz Yisrael. We have been here for 3 years. Enough is enough." The Rosh Yeshiva's words are like a bas kol, a sign from heaven telling us to change. There is a nechmad quality about the land because the gates of heaven are open to Tzion, and no other land in the world can imitate this quality. And so when Rav Kook was in Berlin, Rav Yechiel Yaakov Weinberg opened the windows and said, "Look how beautiful is the view." And Rav Kook burst into tears and he said, "Al naros bavel sham yashavnu gam bachinu b'zachreinu et Tzion." And when he was in Switzerland and he looked at the Alps, and I mean, I was just in Denver, and really, even from the city, my father-in-law took me to Lickau Point in the middle of the community. The mountains, the snow-capped peaks, the seeing the Rockies, even from afar, it's just indescribable. And Rav Kook was taken to see a magnificent view of the mountains. Kavod HaRav, look how beautiful the mountains are. Rav Kook said, "Yes, yes, Yerushalayim Harim Saviva." One who has been to Eretz Yisrael cannot describe it. And one who has not been there, it cannot be described. Yom HaShoah reminds us of the cost of not having a state, while Yom HaZikaron reminds us of the painful cost of having a state. Only one who has not smelled the air over Auschwitz, attributed to the Panovitcher Rav, can denigrate the Jewish state. "You know," said Rav Kahneman, "the non-Jewish teller in Lithuania told me the same thing. But do you know what the difference is? In this holy land, your grandchildren will come back to Kedusha and Torah, and your grandchildren will learn in my yeshiva." "Isn't the air in Switzerland beautiful?" said Rav Shulman to Rav Zilberstein. "No," said Rav Zilberstein to Rav Shulman. "I do not like your words. Has the air of Switzerland become beautiful to you? I thought you came here for the holy atmosphere of Torah. What kind of talk is this?" Said Rabbitson Shoshana Alal Sham, "Enough is enough. The Rosh Yeshiva's words are a bas kol telling us to return." The Pasuk tells us, it's on your handout, in this week's Parsha, actually. Okay, it's a double sedra of Tazria Metzorah. I wanted to somehow tie it into the Parsha. So we'll just see one Pasuk with Rashi. Tazria Metzorah deal with Tumas Hayoladas, actually Tumas and Taharas Hayoladas, Tumas and Taharas HaMetzorah, and also the Zav and Zava, Tuma and Tahara. So there's one theme of the double sedra, which is really Tuma and Tahara. related to the Yoledas, the Mitzora, and the Zav and the Zava. Okay. Now, many halachos, many things that are difficult for us to understand, matters very, very far removed from our day and age. But the pasuk tells us, when you talk about Saras, there's much to learn from, much to speak about. I just want to show you one pasuk about how blessed Eretz Yisrael is. So the pasuk says, it's Vayikra, Yud Dalid, this is in Mitzora, okay? Yud Dalid, Lamed Dalid. It's still on page one of your handout. It's the second pasuk. So the pasuk says as follows, Kisavo al Eretz Kenan. If you want to see the context, look in. It's in the context of talking about Mitzora and Saras. Again, just one pasuk with Rashi. Kisavo, what is this? Kisavo al Eretz Kenan Asher Ani Nosei Nechem. When you come to the land of Canaan that I am giving to you, la'achuzas, and a portion, an inheritance, v'nasati negot saras beveits eretz achuzashem. So we know that saras can appear on the walls, or it could appear on the garment, or it could appear on the person's skin. So here the pasuk says, you know, when you come to the land, I am going to put saras in the walls of the home. Now if there's saras in the walls of the home, they have to either cut out the portion of the wall, they have to take it outside of the camp. Okay, I'm thinking of something else. It's okay. The shorash used to describe taking out the piece of the wall is the same as chalitza by the... Okay, it doesn't matter. I'm thinking of a different tarot that I want to get into. Kisaval eretz can... At all, it's totally off topic. Kisaval eretz kanan asher and you know say necham da'achuzav and asati negat saras beveis eretz achuzaschem. So we're coming to, you know, the eretz avaschal v'dvash, the land of promise, and what? We're going to come there and the houses are going to be inflicted with saras? Is this a bracha? The houses will have to be destroyed. So Rashi says, "Knesati negat saras, bisura hi lachem shahanigayim b'aymalei." This is good news. It's a besura of good news that the affliction, whoops, that the affliction is coming to you. Lefi shehitminu emorim matmonio shezahav bikiros bateim kol arbaim shana shahayusha b'midbar. Because the emorim, one of the shivas Canaanite nations who are in the land, they hid gold treasures in the walls of their homes all the 40 years that Israel was in the desert. Because of the negat saras, he will break down the house and he will find the treasure. So Rashi says this is actually a besura tova, because you're going to come there, and the Amorim hid their treasures. Maybe they heard the Israelite people are coming, and they were afraid, what should we do with our treasures? So they hid them in the walls of the home. And when you come, and there is negat saras, you will break down the walls, and you will discover this treasure. So we see from here that Eretz Yisrael is a land both of revealed treasures, and Eretz Yisrael is also a land of hidden treasure. The whole land is full of treasures, sometimes revealed and sometimes hidden. But these treasures are acquired through great negaim, through great affliction, through suffering and hardship. Again, I think that this pasuk with Rashi contains a very deep lesson. First of all, the theme of our shir, it's thematic, but also a drashic lesson as well. It's telling you that Eretz Yisrael is a land full of treasure, but those treasures are only acquired through negaim, through affliction, through hardship. And in fact, the Gemara tells us that befavors. Like Hashem could have just, I don't know, made the streets paved with gold. No, it's in the kiros batehid, and you have to go through the nega, the affliction, in order to find the treasure. And Rachmana Litzlan, as Yom HaZikaron reminds us, often our people goes through great negaim to uncover, discover, and access the treasure that is Eretz Yisrael. And in fact, the Gemara tells us clearly, and that is the next source on your handout, Maseches Brachos Hey Amud Aleph, it says Brachos 5a on your handout. Tanya, Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Omer. It was taught in a Braisa, the great Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai teaches us. Shalosh Matanos Tovos, Nasan HaKadosh Baruch Hu LiYisrael. You see where I am? On page one? Yeah? Okay, thank you. Shalosh matanos tovos, nasan akash baruch hu liyisrael. Hashem gave us way more than three gifts. There are many more than three gifts in our lives. But these three particular gifts are unique. Why? V'kulan lo nasnan ela al yidei Yisurin. Because these three great treasures are hidden behind Yisurin. Why did Hashem make a nega covering the treasure? Hashem is telling you that if you want to uncover the treasure of Eretz Yisrael, you have to go through the nega first. The treasure's there. It's waiting for you. But the nega sometimes covers it up. Tanya Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Omer Shalosh Matanus Tovos Nasan HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yisrael V'kulan Lo Nasnan Ela Al Yedei Yisurin. And they were all given only through Yisurin. Elu Hein. What are the three gifts that come to us? They're so special. Matanos. Matanos from the Shorosh Natan. Because you give somebody a present. Don't forget the importance of Shavashim and Lashon HaKodesh. Not just a present. Indicative in the word Matana is what it is. It's now saying you give someone something. Hashem gave us great presents. Remember the song, Hashem gave us a present. Do you know what it was? He gave us the Torah. We must keep his laws. Yeah, I think it's 613 Torah Avenue. Okay. This goes on why you Torah. So I'm not going to sing it to you, but some of you are smiling, so you remember the song also. What are the three gifts that we get that only come through Yisurin? Torah. You have to be Amma B'Torah. You have to sweat. You have to work. You have to acquire. Eretz Yisrael and Olam Haba. It's not so easy to be such a... I shouldn't say that. Rav Moshe said, it's so schwer, it's been a yid. It's a battle to overcome the Yetzer Hara and acquire Olam Haba. It's a battle to acquire Torah. The Mechamta Shel Torah Yetzer tells you, don't go to Shir, do this instead. You don't have the time. Don't fit it into your life. And before you know, you're not going anywhere, not learning any Torah. Chas v'shalom, not us. Because of the Yetzer Hara. And finally, Eretz Yisrael. So, Eretz Yisrael. So the Gemara then goes through how you know that each one of these were acquired only through Yisurin. Torah, quotes a pasuk, Eretz Yisrael, and Olam Haba. For purposes of our shir, I just brought you, how do you know Eretz Yisrael is acquired through Yisurin? Because the pasuk tells us, these are pasukim from Devarim, Parak Ches, Ki ka'asher yiyaser ish eskmano, Hashem elokecha miyasreka, just like a man chastises Yisurin. Just like a man chastises his son, so Hashem your God chastises you. And then two psukim later it says, Ki Hashem Elokecha mevi'achal Eretz Tova. So the Gemara says, look at the juxtaposition of these two psukim. One pasuk says, like a man chastises his son, Hashem your God chastises you. And then the very next pasuk, two psukim later says, because Hashem your God brings you to a good land, Eretz Tova. So in order to acquire Eretz Tova, the Gemara learns out from here, we must go through great Yisurin. I'm now going to screen share the next thing for the people at home as well. Okay. I assume you can see. So I looked up when preparing this shiur, lots of sources from all different places today. They always publish the number, Rachmana Letzlan Hashem Yirachim Aleinu, right before Yom HaZikaron. So I could not find, unfortunately, it will be higher than last year, the number of 2023. So I wrote, as of last year. Okay? That's because when I Googled it, they always publish it every year, Hashem Yirachim Ad Masai, couldn't find 2023. As of last year, and I actually gave this to you on your handout. As of last year, Yom HaZikaron on May 2022, a total of 28,284 men, women, and children have been killed in terrorist attacks and in defense of the land since 1860, the year that the first Jewish settlers left the secure walls of Jerusalem to build new Jewish neighborhoods. That's the year that the state counts from. Now, if we in Yahadus hold that every person is a whole world, Gemara says in Sanhedrin, Lama Zayin Aleph, that every person needs to say, Bishvili Nivra Olam. The Gemara there talks about why is Adam HaRishon created Yechidi. So it gives a number of different reasons, a stamp, Hashem makes a stamp, and everyone comes out different. But one thing the Gemara there says is, no one should say, my yichus is better than your yichus. The Gemara gives a number of different reasons in Sanhedrin, Lam, and Zayin, Aleph, as to why Adam was created yichidi. But one of the reasons the Gemara says is because every person is a whole world. And every person should say, if you're a whole world, then the whole world was created for me. 28,000. It's inconceivable, because we know how we all feel when one Jew loses their life. That was the number of us 2022. The next thing you have on your handout is an article from April 10th, 2023, Israel National News, Arut Shava. When we say numbers, it's hard because it doesn't mean so much. Because it's hard to conceptualize of what the numbers mean. So we're now on page 2 of your handout. It was printed, I think, in color. Yeah, I asked them to print it in color. First, let's look at the article. The passing of Lucy Leia D, 48 years old, this afternoon Monday, following the terrorist shooting attack in the Jordan Valley on Friday, in which she was critically wounded, and her daughters Maya and Rita were murdered, has brought the death toll from terrorist attacks committed against Israelis in recent months to 19. The 15 and 20-year-old sisters were laid to rest in the Gush Etzion Cemetery yesterday, Sunday. Shortly after the shooting in the Jordan Valley on Friday, Italian tourist Alessandro Parini was murdered in a terrorist ramming attack in Tel Aviv. In February, brothers Halal and Yagel Yaniv, 19 and 21, were murdered in a terrorist shooting attack in the Arab community of Huwara. They were on a road that many of the residents of the Sharmon use. Also in February, brothers Asher Menachem and Yaakov Yisrael Peli were murdered in a terrorist ramming attack in the Ramat neighborhood of Jerusalem. They were just 8 and 6. I saw 5 and 7, 8 and 6. A third victim, Alter Shlomer Letterman, 20, was killed in the same attack in Jerusalem. You should just know that in the article, it does not have all the ages. If you Google the article, I Googled every name of every victim so that I could put the ages into the article for you. Alter Shlomer Letterman, if you remember, was newly married, 20. In January, 7 people were murdered in a shooting attack in the Neve Yaakov neighborhood on Jerusalem on Friday night, Leil Shabbat. Oh, Friday night is my own, you could see. The article didn't say F-R-I. Including 14-year-old Asher Natan, Shaul Chai, 68-year-old Shul Gabai, Irina Korolova, Rafael Ben Eliyahu, 56, and father of 3, Ali and Natalie Mizrahi, 48 and 45, who were married just 2 years ago. If you remember, they were with his parents for the Friday night meal. And they heard the commotion and the attack ongoing. And she was a nurse. And they ran downstairs. And his father begged them. He said, don't go. You're going to be killed. And they ran down to help. And they were killed. Also, when you notice the ages, think of how old you are, how old I am. I'll be 47 in the summer. And it puts things in perspective a little bit more. When we just say numbers and ages, it's harder to conceptualize of what we're thinking about. And that's why names, not numbers, going back to Yom HaShoah, is so important. 6 million is so huge, you can't even think about what, you literally cannot comprehend what that means. When I read my grandfather's memoirs, it has more meaning. One person's story is more impactful than saying a number that you can't even comprehend. Ali and Natalie Mizrahi, 48 and 45, and 26-year-old Ilya Sosnaski. In February, Bordi police officer, 22-year-old, remember, was at a checkpoint outside the Shuafat refugee camp on a bus. Staff Sergeant Asil Sawid was murdered at the Shuafat checkpoint when he was stabbed by a 13-year-old terrorist who concealed a knife for the purpose of killing an IDF officer. Also in February, U.S. Israeli citizen, he was by the Dead Sea Road, if you remember, 26-year-old Ilan Ganelis was murdered in a shooting attack on Highway 90 between the Dead Sea and Yericho. Many of us have been there many times, including myself on my last 2 trips to Israel. Also in March, 32-year-old Or Eshkar was murdered in a shooting attack in the heart of Tel Aviv. And you see, I put their pictures for you, and I requested that it be printed in color. Alter Schlomer Letterman is in the top corner. I don't know every one of which is who. Staff Sergeant Asil Sawid is on the top row, third from the right. The two Paley brothers, it's very obvious. The middle row to the left are the two Yaniv brothers. The next one is 14-year-old Asher Natan. Middle row, second from the right, is Or Eshkar. Middle row all the way on the right is Ilan Ganelis. Bottom row on the left is Eli and Natalie Mizrahi. Next is Irina Karolova, Ukrainian national. Next is 32-year-old Or Eshkar, bottom row, third from the left. Next to him are the two D sisters, and next to them is their mother. Yom HaShoah reminds us of the cost of not having a state, and Yom HaZikaron reminds us of the cost of having a state. Only one who has not smelled the air over Auschwitz can denigrate the Jewish state. I'm quoting from Rav Soloveitchik. We began with the Rav, two excerpts from the Rav. Well, we began with my grandfather's memoirs. Two excerpts from the Rav from two different Sfarim. One about the windows in Eretz Yisrael that are only open to Tzion and how everyone can access Hasharas HaShechina, and the Lord is righteous in all his ways. And then the definition, rogeg, attraction, magnetic pull, chemda, from Birkon Masod HaRav. And now finally, I want to quote from the Rav thinking aloud on the Parsha Sefer Bamidbar. So in Bamidbar, we have the Maisa, in Sefer Bamidbar, Parsha Shlach, we have the Maisa of the Meraglim. This is from a lecture in 1969. Vayisapru lo vayamru banu el haaretz asher shalachtanu negam zavat chalav udvashi v'zepiryo. The Meraglim came back and they say, Taka, we came to the land, we went, flowing with milk and honey, the fruits, Ephes, the famous Ephes, ki az ha'am hayoshev ba'aretz, you're welcome to take the handouts home. Yom HaZikaron is coming up, and it's important for all of us and our families to not only speak about it, but try, we can't even try, teeny fraction to somehow internalize a little bit of what has been lost, of what we mean, of our brothers and sisters, each one a world. Ki arz ha'am ha'yoshev ba'aretz va'arim b'tzuros g'dos t'magod ve'od v'gam yilidei ha'anak ri'inu sham. Amalek Yoshev Beretz HaNegev, V'achiti, V'ayivusi, V'amori, the same Amori who hid the treasures in their walls of their home. Okay, V'yahas Kalev Es Ha'am El Moshe V'yomer. Kalev hushed the people, and Kalev said, Alo Na'ala, we can go up. V'yarashnu Oso Ki Yachol Nuchala. We can, we will conquer, we will divide, we will inherit the land. Alo Na'ala. Eretz Yisrael, says the Rav, Nikna B'Yisurim. Apparently, says the Rav, the reason Hashem made us sweat and work to acquire the land is because Eretz Yisrael is acquired through hardship. And then the Rav quotes the Gemara that we looked at. Shalosh k'matanos tovos nasan HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'Yisrael v'kulon lo nasan ela al yedei Yisurin. We saw the Gemara in Brachos. Hey, already. Ve'elu hein Torah v'Eretz Yisrael v'olam haba. The Rav explains why Eretz Yisrael is acquired through Yisurin. Lefum tza'ara agra, which is Pirkei Avos, which we started last Shabbos. Lefum tza'ara agra means that God rewards a person according to his effort. According to the effort is the reward. God rewards a person with the hardship he has to contend with, to cope with. The more you work at something, the harder it is to acquire something, the more precious it is to you. What comes easy, you take for granted. But it's not only with regard to the reward on the part of God. It's a fact of life that a person loves and appreciates something in accordance with the hardship he had to undergo in order to get it. The greater the hardship, the greater the commitment. The easier the person gets something, the quicker he will leave it. It's a very small example, but I like to use it. If somebody bakes homemade challah and somebody buys bakery challah, now, last Shabbos, it was Motzei Pesach, we were home for the last day of Chol Moed and second days, and Erev Shabbos, and somehow I agreed to give one of my shiur on Friday afternoon, whatever. I told the director you could be a lawyer. I bought challah. Okay? It sometimes happens that you have to buy challah. Which challah do you appreciate more when you eat it? The one that you generally, most people, if you have a good recipe and you enjoy baking and your family loves it, the one that you baked or the one that you bought? The one that you baked. It's a very small example. But the more effort you put into something, the more you appreciate it. Take even children. Now, please keep in mind, okay? The language is not politically correct. This was in 1969. I'm quoting the Rav verbatim. Take even children. The love of a mother or father for a child is probably the highest form of love which a human being embodies. But if the child, for instance, is a bit retarded, or the child is not bright, or the father or mother may have problems with that child in his education, anything about the child that stands out, that worries you, that doesn't go smoothly, or they spend sleepless nights if the child is sickly or weak, if the child is not a normally healthy child. Of course, it's a headache for the father, a headache for the mother, but the suffering with the child, they love the child, they pray for the child, they think about the child to such an extent, it far transcends the normal love between parent and child. It is true. I know from my experience with people, says the Rav, I know one who has a son who will completely grow up to be an idiot. Again, he uses the word retarded and idiot. It's 1969. He's not insulting anybody. He's saying that children come in different shapes and forms and IQ levels and levels of intellectual ability, but these are the words that were used at that time, the verbiage of that time. I know one who has a son who will grow up to be an idiot, no doubt about it, but the parents' love for that child transcends my love for my children. A father wants a bright child. He takes pride in a bright child. A mother wants a good child, but in loving a child, the love is far greater for a child who is blackened in intelligence or brilliance. And basically, Chazal say, Shalosh matanos tovus nasnu li Yisrael. Three grants have been bestowed upon the people. The kulam lo nasnu ela al yedei Yisurin. There is one caveat, one reservation. The Jew has to acquire them through supreme effort, through suffering, through fighting. Why was it? Is it because the Ribbono Shel Olam wants the Jew to suffer? It is in order to create an eternal bond between certain spiritual values and the Jew. Each one of these things represents spiritual values. Torah, Eretz Yisrael, and Olam Haba. The Jew has to work for it. To wait, to experience pain, loneliness, desolation. Whoever survives this hell, loneliness, pain, desolation, will see a Jewish state. By the Bris Bein Absarim, Avram Avinu said to God, you know, we always talk about Avram who didn't ask questions, and I always have one person in the shiur comes to me after and says, but Avram did ask a question. Avram actually did ask one question. The question was by the Bris Bein Absarim in Perek Tesvav, Avram says, Bima Eida ki Arishana. With what will I know that I will take possession of the land? So it's a famous kasha. Did he ask? Didn't he ask? So there's always a chacham who comes over and says to me, he did ask a kasha. You're right, he did ask one kasha. And there's different ways to explain what Avram Avinu was asking. But here we go with the Rav. Avram Avinu says, Bema Eida ki Arishana. With what do I know that I will take possession, acquire the land? And the Rav is a beautiful insight. Avram was saying, I left Ur Kasdim. You commanded me to leave. My father stopped in Haran. I left. I wasn't involved with the land. Avram knows from experience a person is not connected to land. He was not dedicated to Ur Kasdim, even though Ur Kasdim was his native land, his ancestral homeland, his fatherland. He left Ur Kasdim. Avram wasn't questioning God. Avram was saying, according to the Pshat of the Rav, how do I know that I will be connected to the land? You told me, Lechacham, Me'artzcham, Me'wazacham, Be'savicha, Eretz Asher Arakai, no problem. I picked up and I left. I never went back. I don't feel any connection. So Avram was arguing. If you send me into exile, Yadoa Teda Kiger Yezarecha, Be'eretz Olohem, Va'avadum V'inu Osam Arba Me'oshana, why are you going to want to come back? If I go into exile, I'll forget about the land within 10 to 20 years. That's what he argued, Kaviyacha, with the Ribbono Shel Olam. You're telling me I'll always be inseparable from the land? How can I know? I'll remember the land. I don't care about our custom. I left that land. And now you're telling me that for 400 years we're going to be strangers in a strange land and I'm going to want to come back here? So the Ribbono Shel Olam says to him, Yadoa Teda. Avram Avinu said, Bema Eda. And God answers, Yadoa Teda. He's emphasizing with a double lashon. Yadoa Teda, you have doubts, Avram, about your involvement in the land? You ask me, Bema Eda, how will I know? Yadoa Teda, I assure you, Avram, no one in the world will take the land away from you. Yadoa Teda is the answer to Bema Eda. Why will you be deeply involved with the land? Lufum tsa'ara agra. You'll be dedicated, deeply involved, committed to the land. Do you know why? Because it's going to come through Yisurin. You won't get it right away. No, first, I won't give you the land. I'll tell the Keni, the Knizi, the Kadmoni, they'll be there first. You're going to have to wait a long time, a long, long time. 400 years. Why does the Pasuk tell him? God makes all these promises. So Avram picked up at the age of 75 and he goes with Lod and Sarai and Nefesh Asher Asu Becharan, Perak Yud Beis, Pasuk Vav, Valknani, Asbaretz. And that's my land. Apparently it's not my land. You have to wait a long, long time. And now we're waiting 2,000 years, not 400. And we're still connected. Why? Because it's an Eretz Chemda. Because the windows of Tzion, the windows in heaven, are only open to Tzion. You know, the banker in Lithuania told me the same thing. But you know what the difference is? In this land of holiness, your grandchildren will learn in my yeshiva. And before Yadoa Teda, you won't live in luxury, Avram. You won't wait as a free people until the grant is finalized, formalized. Ger Yezarecha Be'eretz Lolahem. It means you'll be strangers. Va'avadim will be slaves. The Inu Oysam will be tortured, ill-treated. My brother-in-law was able to edge out of the column. He wanted to go to the Christian who took everything we had. The first Pole who found him returned him to the Nazis. They brought him back to the park where he was shot in front of everybody. I had to take him out to the mass grave. His brother-in-law, my grandfather's brother-in-law. Where I saw the arms and legs of those previously shot sticking out of the grave. Ger Yezarecha will be strangers in foreign lands. Avadim will be slaves. Inuysim will be tortured, ill-treated, will be oppressed. Arba Meo Shana. Alpayim Shana. But throughout that period, throughout the dark night of Golos, your children will have one dream, one vision, one aspiration, and one hope. What will be that hope? L'shana haba b'Yerushalayim. I'm quoting verbatim, to get back to the land. And after you come to Eretz Yisrael, I assure you, you will be deeply in love with the land. An eternal love, not just a friendship affair. The ma'eda ki arishana, you know what the answer is? Yadoa teda, ki ger yezarecha, strangers, va'avadum, slaves, vi'inu oisem, tortured, ill-treated. Arba me'o shana, but through that long period of galus, through the dark night of exile, you will have one dream, one vision, one hope, one aspiration. What will be the hope? We suffer now, so Messiah will come. Whoever will survive this hell will see a Jewish state. To get back to the land, L'shana haba b'Yerushalayim. And after you come back to Eretz Yisrael, I assure you, va'acharecha nietzu birchush gadol, you will be deeply in love with the land. It will be an eternal love, not like Ur Kostim, not Charan, not a friendship affair. One more paragraph. I'll try not to interrupt him. That's what we emphasize in the Haggadah. We recite these psukim in the Haggadah. Va'achshav kirvanu hamakam la'avodaso. After the galus comes the geula, and the Ribbono Shel Olam brings us close to him. And it relates to the 19 kedoshim whose faces you see in front of you. That's what we emphasize in the Haggadah, va'achshav kirvanu. You know very well, after you lose so many young boys defending the land, you don't leave. There's another very famous story of Rav Shlomo Zalman. Someone told him he was going to the north to daven by Kivrei Tzadikim. And Rav Shlomo Zalman pointed them to Har Herzl. And he said, why do you need to go to the north? You have a whole mountain of Kivrei Tzadikim right here. You know what ties a person to the land, says the Rav? A grave, a kever. It ties a person more than anything else. Yadoa, you want to know how much you'll be involved in the land, Avram? How much you experience Jewish destiny? Yadoa teda. You'll never be separated from the land. You will always come back. And there's no power in the world which can take you away. So in light of Yom HaShoah, upcoming Dalet Iyar, Yom HaZikaron, an upcoming Hey Iyar, Litif Eret, Medina Yisrael, as the torchlighters say, when they light the torch, isn't the view of Berlin beautiful, Rav Kook? Kavod Rav. Rav Kook looked out the window, he burst into tears, and he said, Al Narus Bavel, Sham Yashavnu, Gam Bachinu Bezachreinu at Zion, Im Eshkachech Yerushalayim, Tishkach Yamini, Litif Eret, Medina Yisrael. We actually continue next Thursday, which is after, the day after Yom HaAtzmaut. Part two is next week. I wish everybody a Chodesh Tov and a Chag Atzmaut Sameach. Thank you so much, everybody. Kol Tov. Please pay attention. Oh, I should. If everyone could give their attention for 30 seconds to an announcement. Stay there.
Good morning, everyone.